Smith back in the USSR. Well, the delivery girl's really knocked me out.
I'm joined now by Daniel Treisman, who is a professor of political science at the University of California, Los Angeles, a specialist on the politics and economics of post-communist Russia, a recipient of fellowships from the John Simon Guggenheim Foundation, the German Marshall Fund of the United States, and the Hoover Institution. He's the author of two acclaimed books on Russia, and his newest is Return, Russia's Journey from Gorbachev to Medvedev. Welcome to Background Briefing, Daniel Treisman.
Thank you.
I wanted to ask you a basic threshold question that's been puzzling me as somebody who's been thinking about the Soviet Union and Russia since probably before you were born. Namely, what is the difference in terms of foreign policy and authoritarianism between the Kremlin in, say, 1969 and the Kremlin today?
Well, of course, the Kremlin in 1969 made no pretense of being democratic. It, of course, had elections and it claimed to be a democracy, a people's democracy, but it made far less effort than the regimes we see in Russia since 1991 to go through the motions of democratic politics. Now, I would say at present, Russia under President Putin is a relatively soft authoritarian state. Some people would say it's a hybrid regime with some features of democracy, some of autocracy, mixed together in a rather strange combination. But in terms of foreign policy, there are some things which were distinctively Soviet, supporting Marxist revolutions around the world. Russia no longer does that. But there are some things which are really tied to Russia's national interest, or then the Soviet national interest. And I think it's to be expected that there'll be a certain amount of disagreement between the great power that is centered in Moscow and the superpower that is centered in Washington.
Well, let's move on to that topic, if we could, Daniel. Specifically, the nature of U.S.-Russian relations today versus in the past. In the early 1990s, we were very triumphant here. We'd won the Cold War. They were in full retreat and so on. One senses a desire to, in a sense, bring back the Russian bear to its full glory.
Well, I think perhaps in some earlier years there was a certain amount of this resentment, this desire to get respect from the West. I think really these days, although Putin sometimes speaks in a way which is somewhat anti-American, at the same time, I think the Russian foreign policy is quite pragmatic. And in fact, it's driven by interests, which sometimes don't overlap with U.S. interests. I think Russia is going through a difficult period at the moment. Its economic growth is decreasing. It has to try to craft a new economic strategy to take it beyond the current situation of heavy dependence on natural resources, oil and gas. And at the same time, Putin has come under real pressure from opposition, which would like a more open liberal political system. So I don't see Russia today as being particularly assertive, although it is always quick to make clear its disagreements with Western policies.
So a big issue for them is how do they add value to their economy in a manufacturing way or a services way, as opposed to living from quarrying and mining,
right.
Because that's not the way to build an economy, sometimes called the Dutch disease. And secondly, what do they do about a fairly restive civil society? Now,
right.
Just popping onto that topic for a moment, Daniel Treisman, I'm very interested in and very concerned about, as will be many of our listeners, what's happened with the Pussy Riot affair and also the Greenpeace 30 or the Arctic 30. Let's look at Greenpeace first. That does relate to this whole resources diplomacy issue, doesn't it?
Yes, and it really brings into clear focus an element of cultural difference between Russia and Western Europe and also the U.S. to some extent. I would say culturally, Russia is really quite similar to various Western countries about 30 years ago. So if we look at attitudes towards the environment, towards homosexuality, towards religion and various other subjects, Russia is very much a kind of traditional conservative society like various Western European countries about 30 years ago. And definitely like the U.S. in some regards. The West has really developed in a very interesting way in the last 30 years, and Russia perhaps will catch up to it. But at the moment, what the Russian leaders dismissively refer to as political correctness is really at odds with the way that I think still most people in Russia think.
I'm speaking with Daniel Treisman, a professor of political science at UCLA, and his latest book is called Return, Russia's Journey from Gorbachev to Medvedev. And thinking about Pussy Riot, a more indigenous local phenomenon than Greenpeace, is this again a case of women should be seen and not heard, and Russia being caught in a kind of old-school politics and not really alive to the cultural politics of the vibrant civil societies we've seen in the last three decades?
I don't really think it's about women and women should be seen and not heard. It's more about opponents of the government should be polite and people should not violate the sanctity of the Orthodox Church. But at the same time, I think it's far less about some deep values than about opportunistic politics on the part of the Kremlin. Putin facing unprecedented public demonstrations in the end of 2011, beginning of 2012, demonstrations that were really focused in the cities and in the most modernized, most internationalized stratum of society. Putin really wanted to try and isolate this urban danger, this new postmodern class from the heartland of Russia, which is where Putin thinks that his solid base of support lies. And he chose to do that in part through waging a culture war or a cultural war. And it really served his purposes to emphasize the Pussy Riot issue and as well as to emphasize gay rights campaigns, which were very small in Russia at the time, in order to make the ordinary fairly conservative Russians in the provinces feel very distant from these protesters in the cities, to really emphasize, to claim that the goals of the protesters in the cities were to impose a kind of West European style postmodern society and lifestyle on Russia, rather than to, I would say, more honestly portray the protesters as being primarily motivated by a desire for less corruption and more democratic freedom.
So, Daniel Treisman, if you were offering advice to Pussy Riot or Greenpeace in managing their situations, what would it be?
Well, it depends on their goals. I think Pussy Riot, the whole Pussy Riot affair could have been managed and made to go away quite quickly if the girls of Pussy Riot were perhaps less brave and less determined and had reversed themselves, apologized. I think it could have been negotiated away. But they really believed in what they had said and what they were doing. They stood up for these positions. And I think in the end, they were used by the Kremlin to make this political point to the mainstream of Russian society. At the same time, I think they have changed Russian society somewhat. There are debates going on within Russia that simply weren't taking place before the Pussy Riot case. So they have had an impact, but I don't think it's my place to advise them on what to do. It's really for them to think, what their goals are, and I'm sure they're capable of pursuing them in an effective way.
Fair enough. If you've got time, one quick question about Syria.
Okay.
Many people are depicting Russia's role in the Syrian diplomacy of the last few weeks as a triumphant one, by contrast with the United States, France, and so on. What's your take?
Well, I actually was at a meeting where Putin spoke about 3 weeks ago, and he was given the chance, given the opportunity to gloat over the chemical weapons management plan that he had come up with. And he chose not to gloat. He said, he was asked by a journalist, doesn't this help Obama to save face? And Putin replied, this isn't about saving face. It's just that Russian and American interests coincided on this. And we're both eager to make this work, or words to that effect. So I think the Russians don't see this as being about scoring points or anything like that. It simply happened that both Russia and the U.S. saw some way to advance their own interests. It's definitely in the Russian interest not to have a vast chemical weapons arsenal in Syria. And, of course, it was in the U.S. Interest at that point, and also in President Obama's interest to find a way out of the very complicated situation that had emerged at that point.
Daniel Treisman, thank you very much.
Thank you.
This is Background Briefing. I'm Toby Miller, sitting in for Ian Masters. We were speaking with Daniel Treisman, Professor of Political Science at the University of California, Los Angeles, and a leading specialist on the politics and economics of post-communist Russia, a recipient of fellowships from the John Simon Guggenheim Foundation, the German Marshall Fund of the United States, and the Hoover Institution. He's the author of two acclaimed books on Russia, and his latest is called Return, Russia's Journey from Gorbachev to Medvedev. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Toby Miller, and I've been sitting in for Ian Masters. Ian is in Australia for the premiere of a film he made for the BBC in 1968 that was shown once and then destroyed because it was considered too controversial. Fortunately, the movie's director recently discovered a print, and the documentary was reconstructed by the ABC in Australia. It'll be shown for the first time in 45 years at the Sydney Opera House on Thursday night. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. The program is available online at ianmasters.com, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. Took the kids to the park and disappeared by half.